who's going to look
okay,
out.
Okay, the last word nursing is for resuming. We'll turn it back over to Jim.
Thank you very much. So we're making good progress on the presentation, and we'll continue then. And again, feel free to stop on any questions. So on this slide, we're looking at the benefits for nursing boards. And I should take a step back and say that there's a lot of repetition built into this presentation, and that's because there's a lot of information. So it's good to hear it more than once. And as we see here, the ability to share complaint and investigative information with other compact states. So keep in mind that when we talk about that, we're not talking about that information becoming public. We're saying that other compact states, the boards, have access to knowing nurses who are under investigation in the compact state. Okay, and that's through the national database nurses. So the second and third bullets here really pertain to this looking through a new lens when it comes to public protection. Whereas as a non-compact state, you were concerned with protecting the public of Alaska. And now it's a broader spectrum because every state is not only concerned with protecting the public of their state, but doing the right thing because it means protecting the public in all compact states. We talked about, in your example, that nurse who was under discipline, who's going to have her multi-state privileges taken away because she's under discipline. That's important to other compact states. Imagine if this potentially unsafe or incompetent nurse did not have her multi-state privileges taken away. Then that becomes an issue, right? That's not protecting the public across all compact states. And so that is what we mean by a shared responsibility and a shared commitment for public protection.
Emily?
So with public safety in that aspect, some of our some of our role places here in Alaska, you're looking at anywhere from under 100 population to like 3,500 population.
Sure.
And, you know, we have, as a board, we never know who's coming into the state as a multi-state license. We won't see who they are. Now, like a large company like Providence or a large hospital is going to check all of this stuff with employers and nurses and stuff, but once they're up in the villages and stuff, they don't have always that, hey, yes, you were hired as a multi-state license and you're working up in Nome, but who checks, you know, whether or not they are expiring, and how is, like, I'm afraid of people coming in here and working as a nurse with a multi-state license and then, like, their license expire, and, like, some of these employer, like, some of the out rural places don't have the same abilities that, like, Providence and stuff would. So it's just kind of like a scary public safety thing for me that, like, the rural places not really having the ability to keep everybody safe out there. It's like, I don't know if it, like, my question really came off right.
Yeah, no, I think I'm understanding it, but it sounds like most of what you're talking about is the onus of the employer.
Yeah, I would say it's mostly on the employer, but then, like, as the board, we're not going to know who these nurses are that are coming in here. And that's what kind of, you know,
okay,
keep a count on that.
Let me see if I can clean up a little bit. So if a nurse has a multi-state license and comes up to one of the villages and is working there, and all of a sudden he or she loses that multi-state license due to some infraction from the home state, and now that nurse is here with a multi-state license in hand in the village, but yet the home state has revoked the multi-state license, and her employer, when it was checked out, has said, okay, you are a multi-state, you know, you're good to go, you hold a multi-state license. How does the board know that that nurse is in Alaska working underneath a single-state license now and not his or her multi-state license?
Well, I'm not sure that the board needs to know, because the board doesn't check every time someone hires someone.
Correct. So it would be on the employer?
But the employers definitely check to see that a nurse is appropriately licensed to be hired.
Well, yeah, to be hired, but then what happens when something happens after they're hired and they're in the villages and stuff, and, like, their employer should continuously keep check on that kind of stuff, but I don't know that out there it really would happen
as well.
Can
I help you on that one?
Yes, absolutely. 1 second. So I'm trying to think of how that's... Is it different when they have an Alaska single state license, or could they potentially... Couldn't they potentially hire today someone that they shouldn't hire? Someone that maybe doesn't have an active license? Couldn't that happen today?
Is it on that?
Or it could just be, say it expires. It's a current license, compact license when they start, and after they've been working up there, they just, it expires up there. Who would know?
Right.
Beside if, and if they don't have a competent employer, because it may be a very small place that they're working, and nobody checks, and they just let it go because they're up there and nobody's checking.
So that could happen with an Alaska license today, then?
No, because we would send them a notice, and we would know if they're... I mean, we would be notifying them that their license was expiring. We couldn't...
The board
would
be notifying.
Know where they're working, exactly. Yeah. You're right.
Right. So when you say we would send them a notice, you mean to the licensee?
That their license was expiring.
Right.
Right.
As would their home state. So it's I don't see it as any different.
It's just in some of the rural areas, there's not the technology, I guess, to also be... how else do we want to...
Do you think that they don't look up in a database to see if it's
an active license? They do when they're hired and stuff. That's what I'm saying. But, like, some of these very small companies may not keep up with that, is what I'm trying to say.
So the follow-ups.
Like, the follow-ups and stuff.
So there is a mechanism to help with that.
There would be, yes.
Which is e-notify. And I don't know if you're familiar with e-notify, but e-notify is a part of NERSIS system. So any nurse can be put into e-notify, and then the nurse and the employer get notified in advance of the expiration, 30, 60, or 90 days in advance, to give you a heads up that this expiration... Actually, it notifies you of any change to the status of the nurse's license, whether it be discipline or expiration. So that's possible, and either it's easy for the employer to upload a spreadsheet of their nursing workforce into e-notify, and then they would all be in, the employer would get notifications for every one of them if there's any change to their status. I'm sorry, Joey, I kept talking and you had some comments.
It's e-notify.
Oh, okay.
Up to the board to make sure the employers know that that service is available. But we have, our largest employers in the state of Arizona have entered all of their nurses in it. And the nurses themselves can be entered into it. What we find is the educational, like in the universities, tend to not always make sure that the faculty is licensed. So we've had a couple of events with that. Now they've uploaded all their nurses. They get notified before their license expires, and they get notified if there's any action on their license. But it's the same way with employers. If action is taken on the multi-state or the state license, they get notified. They don't have to wait and read it in your newsletter or online or however you get that information out. And we probably, I probably should look at my numbers in the last month, but right now I think we have almost 30,000 nurses in Arizona that are in e-notify, that we know that they're automatically notified when there's a change, whether it be the expiration of their license is about due or there's been some action on their license. Because sometimes you'll hear a nurse say, but nobody ever told me that whatever happened in what state. They can't tell you that anymore if they're enrolled in it. But the work is getting people enrolled and getting employers to know to get people enrolled. There's a couple states that have been challenging each other to get more people than the other state, and it's Texas and Missouri. And I don't know where they are in their campaign.
They're over 90% now.
Are they the same? But I mean, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything, and it helps you protect the public. So. And there's one person, maybe more, at National Council that's dedicated to nothing but helping you understand what the process is and how to get the word out. So
what Joy's referring to is we have one full-time employee who does nothing but recruit hospitals to become a part of eNotify. There's no cost for it, but they need help with doing it. We have staff that helps them.
And it's every entity. It's not just hospitals. It's anywhere that they have the employee nursing staff. So
there's a mechanism for that. Does that help?
Yeah, to an extent.
I'll get more info as we keep going. So
keep in mind that this is a new way of licensure, and there is a huge learning curve for your employers too. So there's a lot of education to employers, but they should already be in the habit of making sure that they're hiring someone who is, and they should have their processes in place to make sure that someone always is working with an active license. That's not something they need to start thinking of when you enter the compact. That's something they should already have in place. So do people fall through the cracks, even in the biggest of systems that are not remote states? Remote villages. So it doesn't take being remote for something to fall through the cracks. But we have a system that can work because it has the expiration dates of all the nurses in the country. And can provide in advance notification. Okay, so the authority for exists in the compact to limit or take action on the privilege to practice of a nurse. So if a nurse from Arizona is practicing in Alaska and violates here, you have the authority to take action to stop that nurse from practicing here, okay? So you probably, as a board, take action on nurse and Alaska nurses' licenses, and you do things such as issue warnings, a letter of concern, perhaps you call it. You issue fines. You suspend or put someone on probation. You revoke people, right, their licenses. Those are all the same actions that apply to the privilege to practice. So in other words, that nurse working here from Arizona is subject to your state laws, and that whole litany of disciplinary measures that I just listed applies to the privilege to practice as well. Okay? So you suspend the privilege to practice. You revoke the privilege to practice. You put on the privilege to practice on probation, etc. Does that make sense? That's their authority to work here, which means you stop them from working here. The other thing is, it's not on this slide, but it gives you the authority to issue an order of cease and desist, meaning stop, you're out of here. Okay? You may already have that authority in your state law.
So, Jim, that would go to nurses and eNotify. If we found a nurse that was here, and we notify eNotify and the home state? Or does the home state notify eNotify or nurses?
So eNotify is tied into the nurses' system. What you do is what you normally always already do, which is you enter your discipline into the system, into nurses, mm-hmm. and that gets sent to the National Practitioner Databank. But when it gets entered into nurses, that's tied into eNotify. Therefore, because there was a change in the license status, any change, then any recipient gets notified of that change. Anyone who's subscribed to receive those notifications.
So if you would take action on a nurse up here that is also licensed in Arizona, we get notified of that. We look at it and decide what we're going to do about it. Sometimes if it's a social issue, maybe they can pay their loan back, or something specific to that state that does not violate our laws, we don't do anything with it because it's your state laws, not ours. Mm-hmm. So we get notified and we work the list all the time to make sure that we look at it once a week, that every state does it differently. Some only need to look at it once a month. Some look at it daily. But you get notified.
Beth? Through the chair. And the last time when we had the presentation from NCSBN, I believe it is our state that would take the cost of the investigation for this because it's an Alaska issue. Is that correct still?
You
even with the new compact?
You would conduct the investigation where the violation occurred. Similarly, if an Alaska nurse was practicing in Arizona and violated there, they would conduct the investigation there.
Okay.
Yes, and we'll talk more about investigations later on as well.
Okay, mine was kind of going on with it. So if the nurse from Arizona came up here, had an infraction, would we then present, gather everything, and then Arizona does the disciplinary, or do we do the disciplinary?
You both do.
Both do.
You're going to take action on the privilege. You're going to send the findings and the investigative file to Arizona. Then they're going to take reciprocal action on the license.
Okay.
Privilege and license. They issued the license.
Okay.
And we're going to go through that in step-by-step detail later.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll cover up when I do Jessica.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
Anything else? Continue, please.
Okay. All right. So we said that we started out with this original compact that started in 2000, was drafted in the 90s. We got up to 25 states, and then once we got a new enhanced compact kicked off in January of 2018, then we had the dissolution of the original compact. So now we're just to the one compact again. And we talked about the reasons why we had to revise the compact. It's something that revising a compact is something that you don't want to have to do ever, because it's enacted in so many states. Each state has to go back to their legislature and say, we want to revise this simultaneously. So, all right. So who's the Interstate Commission? Because one of the great misunderstandings is that this compact is synonymous with NCSBN. Okay? This is not NCSBN's compact. It was developed by NCSBN's members. NCSBN's members voted on and adopted the language of the compact. But once the first two states joined, because in a contract you got to have two parties, right? Once we had two parties, now it became its own independent governmental agency. And the name we give to the agency is a commission, Interstate Commission. That's just the name, the terminology that's given, modern terminology that's given to these compact agencies. It doesn't have a brick-and-mortar building, and that's for reasons of economics. They don't have their own staff that they hire or their own health plan, and that's because it made most sense to keep the cost down for states. So a state pays $6,000 a year to be a member, and obviously if you do the math, 30-some states times $6,000, that's not a whole lot to run an organization, right? So that's a little money. So this compact and borderless practice as a whole is a strategic goal of NCSBN. Therefore, NCSBN largely subsidizes the operations of the compact. So, yes, the compact has some money from the $6,000 they take in, but the way that it works is the commission made an agreement with NCSBN to say, NCSBN, you have 140 staff. Why don't you help us run the compact? We'll pay you this amount of money to give us all the services we need to run the compact. And that's what they did. So the compact writes a check for $50,000 per year and gives it to NCSBN, and they have full access to marketing department, finance department, staffing. So and the staffing is very minimal, myself and one assistant that I have. And that's how it works. If you were to look up the other 20-something compacts that your state is a member of, you would see that they don't have the benefit of an association to fund them that way. Which means what? They get their money to operate from the annual fee. And you might be surprised to see that the annual fee for each compact that your state is a member of is $20,000, $50,000, $100,000, $150,000 per year. Okay? No other compact has a fee that low, because it's unusual to find an association that's willing to largely subsidize the compact. Okay? Even in the medical compact, if you've heard, we looked earlier at the list of compacts, the medical compact for doctors, for them to process one doctor's application, there's a $700 surcharge on it. That's how the compact gets their money. Each doc pays $700 in addition to the licensing fees. So this agency, the commission, has its own board. So this is a separate and distinct agency from NCSBN. As we said, Joey was the, when I started back in 2010, Joey was president of the commission for the compact for two terms. And that's why she's here today, as someone who has experience not only in the compact but in regulation. The commission is made up of the commissioners. The commissioners are the head of the Board of Nursing. And it could be, in legal writing, whoever the state appoints to be the commissioner. But it's generally the head of the Board of Nursing, the executive director of the board. Now, because there's an option that it could be a designee, if the head of the Board of Nursing isn't able to attend a meeting, they can designate someone else to attend in their place. Okay? And that person also has voting response rights as well, to vote on behalf of the commissioner, on behalf of the state. Any questions there?
Any questions?
Okay. So this board, this executive committee, meets face-to-face three times a year at different places in the country, not just in Chicago, and as well as they meet by phone three times a year. The full commission, which is all of the commissioners, meet twice per year in conjunction with the NCSBN annual and mid-year meeting. So they meet the day prior to the NCSBN annual and mid-year meeting, one full day. It's for ease of travel. They're already going there. And then they meet three times per year by phone. Okay? And all travel of commissioners is funded by the commission. Travel, hotel, meals, etc. So there's nothing that related to being a commissioner that comes out of the state's pocket. Anything you wanted to add there? Okay. I want to talk about rulemaking for a second. Every board is familiar with rulemaking. You go through rulemaking processes. You ensure that you have a comment period for the public to review and comment on rules, proposed rules. And similarly for the compact as an agency. Okay? The difference is that the commission bears the authority to adopt the rules, okay, rather than the state legislature. Now, this is a significant difference from the original compact. In the original compact, the rules had to go through each state legislature. And I'll tell you that in my time under the original compact, we made one rule amendment, a very simple amendment. And because it had to go through each state legislature, you had to wait for 25 states to take action on a rule amendment. 6 years later, just over 50% of the states promulgated the amended rule. So that means it's horrible for uniformity across the compact states, because you have every state doing something different. In this way, these rules are, and you're familiar with rules, they derive their authority from the statute. The statute is the compact itself. So one of the great misunderstandings out there is that, well, now the commission is going to change our Nurse Practice Act. Well, your Nurse Practice Act isn't in the compact language. Our rulemaking ability is only to what's in the compact language. So the rules pertain to the operations of the compact and the implementation of the compact. Okay? Only to what's within our purview. It's a very narrow space.
Question.
And
Jim?
Can I just interrupt for one second? So if there was a change to the compact, then it would require going through legislation.
Because to the contract itself, to
right.
The statute.
Because then the contract would be changed.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And since we just did that, we hope not to do that again in our lifetimes.
Can you imagine?
Okay. So in the procedural requirements, you'll notice that this may be similar to what your state does. okay? And I'm not sure what your procedural requirements are, but there's a notice that goes out to the public that's posted right on your website, notice of proposed rulemaking for compact rules. They can click on that and see what the proposed rules are. They can read about when the public hearing is on the proposed rules. They can dial into the hearing and comment, or they can post their comments online, okay? And everything's available at that one click of the link. And you can post that wherever you typically post your proposed rules. The Compact Commission, or the Rules Committee, I should say, will review each comment and respond back to each person that commented. Any questions on that process? So this is very similar to the process that most states have. And because it goes on your website, your state, your residents of your state have access to comment just as they would normally. Okay. Cover, we have time. Still doing good. Okay, so we're going to delve into the licensure aspect. So we have licensure, then discipline, and then we're done. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So we start out with the 11 uniform requirements, okay? So this is what a nurse needs to meet in order to get a multi-state license. Only applies to the multi-state license, and this pertains, we're talking about your Alaska residents, okay? First of all, an applicant would need to meet your Alaska requirements, whatever they are, for a license. Because if you can't be licensed here, you can't get a multi-state license. You got to meet your requirements first. Number two, graduate from a board-approved program. Okay, that's pretty standard across the country, right? And then how we deal with foreign applicants is also pretty standard. That if the person graduated from a foreign program, they have to get what's called a CES, or the equivalency. Certificate. And you'd get that from an external agency. For those of you who are staff or board members, do you get that from some organization like CGFNS? Who you utilize as your vendor for that foreign credentialing is up to you. We don't tell you who to utilize. But notice that it says independent. Independent means it can't be done by a board of nursing. There are a few states that do their own foreign credentialing review, and that's not good, okay? We want the experts to do it, and so it should be an independent agency. Similarly, in most states, in number three, if you're a foreign grad and you went through a nursing program that was not taught in English, you need to pass an English proficiency exam, okay? And that tests four areas, right? Mm-hmm. Is that reading, writing, listening?
Speaking.
Okay. So I think that's already standard for you. You have that in place. Nothing new. Okay. So as you go through these, you can see, well, what's different from what we're currently doing now? As board members and as staff, I think you can easily identify that. Number four, pass the NCLEX. And prior to the NCLEX, we had the State Board Test Pool exam, right? Okay. Number five, you can't have any discipline, no active discipline. In other words, current active discipline means no multi-state license, okay? And that means discipline in any state. So you receive the application, you query nurses, this person's under discipline in such and such state. They don't meet a requirement. Number six is the state and federal fingerprint-based background check, okay? And number seven, the alternative program. I think seven and eight pertain to the alternative program. Do you have one here? Okay. Not every state has an alternative program. And for those of you that are not familiar, this is a program that someone can enter in lieu of discipline for substance use-related disorders. Okay. But if someone is in such a program, they're not eligible for a multi-state license. So as in number eight, they're required to self-disclose if they're in that program. And why is that? So that becomes a new question on your application. Are you in an alternative program? because someone who's endorsing into your state may be in a program in another state, right? You need to know that. The other thing is that states vary as to their programs. Some of them are board-run, and some of them are run by a third party. So in some states, people are ordered into a program, but in some states, a nurse can voluntarily enter a program without the board's knowledge. Okay? So there's language that goes into the participation agreement. When a nurse signs the agreement to join the program, it says you're limited to practice in this state. You can't have a multi-state license. It also says if you're entering the program without the knowledge of the board, you need to notify them within 10 days. Okay? Number 9, no misdemeanors related to the practice of nursing. So since you already do background checks, I think you already see criminal histories that have misdemeanors. And I think you probably look at them and make a judgment, right? And as this says, on a case-by-case basis, just as you do. Misdemeanor doesn't mean someone's automatically barred from being licensed, right? But it's going to depend. And as it says here, the only ones we're concerned about are those related to the practice of nursing. Okay? Because that's what makes the most sense. Those are the ones that might potentially impact patient safety. Now, sounds like a little bit of a gray area, right? Because we're not providing you with a list of what those misdemeanors are. But I would tell you, and Joey also wears the hat of being the chair of our rules committee currently. So rules committee is, since this compact is 1 year old, we're still working on drafting rules and proposing rules. And one of the next areas they're working on is, how do we give some clarity to number 9? Whether it be by rule or by guidance or policy, how do we help states to give them some more guidance as to what are we talking about when we're talking about those? But in any case, whatever we say, it can't be entirely cut and dry because it's on a case-by-case basis. You'll always be able to exercise your own judgment as a board. Number 10 is the Social Security number is required, and number 11 is the felony bar to a multi-state license. Okay? This was something very important when all the boards of nursing got together and were drafting the compact. You have states that may issue, based on circumstances, a felony that was 20 years ago, perhaps, and states where there's an absolute bar to you can't get a license if you have a felony. We had to err on the side of caution and say that no felonies are permitted to get if you want a multi-state license. And it doesn't matter related to nursing or not. If there's a felony in your criminal history, you can't get a multi-state license. There's not it was 10 years ago or anything like that. Someone would have to have it removed from their criminal history in order to be considered for multi-state. But typically, in most states, that's called expungement. Any questions before we move on?
I have a question for you on number 2 on the previous slide. I know some programs on the back east, they have a multi-level, it's like a hybrid program where the student goes in as a generic nursing student and they're going from generic to an MSN. And somewhere along the line, they meet the school requirement and they get a certificate issued from the schools in order to take the NCLEX for that state. Do you know if any of those states that are in the compact allow that individual to get a multi-license?
That's a good question. Are you familiar with that?
I am, and I don't know the answer. We'd have to look that up. But I think as long as they have a program code for NCLEX, they probably are deemed eligible to be able to have a multi-state license. But okay. We need to look it up.
Okay. So we can have certain levels or... what qualifies as an education program. And if it doesn't meet that level, some of the certificates that we see from back east, they've gone through the program halfway and they stop before they attain an associate degree or a bachelor degree because it's not built into their program to attain an ADN or an AAS. So they stop halfway and they're working as a nurse and they apply to different states to get an RN license because they have their RN license from their home state. but they don't meet the educational requirements for our investigation. So I'm just curious if that home state is a multi-compact state, will they issue a in-state license only, or does that person get a multi-license? That would be my question.
For it. We don't have it in Arizona, so I'm not as comfortable telling you an answer without looking it up. But I think it's graduated or be eligible. But we need to look it up.
Okay.
Let me take a look quickly at the actual statute.
I would think it depends on the state of issuing the...
So the precise language is, as Joey said, has graduated or is eligible to graduate from a licensing board-approved RN or LPN program.
So, read the second one again for me.
Has graduated or is eligible to graduate from a board-approved RN or LPN education program.
Okay, so that means as they're going through the process, they're able to take the exam and get that multi-state license as they're still going to attain their final end degree. Awarded a degree yet.
You would make that determination of which part you want to accept, graduated or eligible, but you would make that decision.
No, what I'm saying is that's for us, but I'm saying for their home state, they could be licensing a nurse to have a multi-state license that hasn't attained a degree yet. They're in the process of, from your last phrase there. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. They could get halfway through their program and they say, oh, I have my RN now. I really don't want, I want to stop, have kids. I got married, I have a mortgage, and I'd rather work than go back to school. So their home state has given them permission to be a nurse there, but education-wise, they've stopped midstream, and they might not meet the bar for the other boards.
But they've had to pass the NCLEX.
They did pass the NCLEX.
I think we'll need to get more clarification on that. And I say that because I'm thinking of a recent public inquiry I got in my inbox, which a gentleman told me he was in that situation, and he said the board denied me a multi-state license because I didn't actually graduate.
Okay, that would be probably the situation I'm talking about.
And I told them, well, that's at the board's discretion.
Of their home state.
Right.
Okay.
I'm not going to intervene and tell them you got to give them a multi-state license. But we can come back to you on that.
Let me hang off of that, but if they were able to get a multi-state license...
Can you hold that?
Okay.
Just for a moment. Let them finish, and then I'll open up to the public.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry.
No problem. Go ahead, Jim.
All right, thank you. Okay, so we finished the ULRs.
Yes.
Okay. They have some moving scenarios, and then we get into discipline. Okay, so this is just so you're familiar with how it works when nurses move from one state to another. Obviously, we're talking about changing your primary state of residency, meaning the legal status. Let's say Joey falls in love with Alaska because she's tired of the Arizona heat and moves to Alaska. She changes her legal residency to Alaska. That's different than a nurse that comes here as a travel nurse who intends to go back to where they came from. Okay? So we're talking about those permanent moves. First of all, how do we deal with primary state of residency? Well, first of all, there's a legal attestation in the application. It's probably half a page long, and it indicates that you sign your name on the dotted line, Alaska, I declare that Alaska is my primary state of residence under penalty of perjury. Okay? So this is an attestation, and then the board, at the board's discretion, can ask for pieces of proof. Okay? Until you're satisfied, you can ask for whatever pieces, not limited to these items. I have a driver's license and voter's card on here because those are the most common things that people use to provide proof of where they live. But it could be anything, okay? At your discretion. In the first scenario, someone's moving from a non-compact state to a compact state. So here, a nurse is a resident of Washington State, which is not a compact state, probably holds a Washington license, and is making a permanent move to Colorado, which is a compact state. So there's a couple of ways that can go. Because if the nurse applies for the Colorado license while they're a Washington resident and indicates Washington in the declaration, what kind of license are they going to be issued?
Single state.
Single state, because they don't meet the residency requirement. Okay? But that's not entirely bad, because once she or he arrives in Colorado, they can notify the Board of Nursing that they're a resident now, sign a new declaration, and provide proof that they live in Colorado now. Okay? The other way is to wait until you're in Colorado and then apply. Okay? Does that make sense to everyone? Now we have someone moving from a compact state to another compact state, which is a Colorado multi-state license holder. They're a resident of Colorado, got a new job, having a new life in Mississippi. Okay? Now the benefit here is that this Colorado nurse can start working immediately in Mississippi because they already have the authority to practice in any compact state. But upon moving there, they need to get in the license by endorsement process. They need to apply for license by endorsement upon arriving there to get the Mississippi license. What else did they need to get as soon as they get there? Mississippi driver's license, right? You can't continue driving on a Colorado driver's license forever until it expires. States require you to get a new driver's license when you move to a new state and become a resident of a new state. Okay? Same way the nurse compact works. Okay? What do a lot of people do, though? They keep that driver's license until it expires, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though that's not what the law says. Okay? So, and that's where employer education comes in very handily. Now, because the compact has been around a long time, in compact states, employers largely know, okay, you're a travel nurse versus a nurse moving here permanently, and they know which way they need to go. The travel nurse doesn't have to do anything. The person who moved here from another state, you need to be in an application process, okay? And they ensure by policy that the nurse is doing what they're supposed to do, okay? So, once the Mississippi multi-state license gets issued, the Colorado license gets deactivated, okay? But not before, because we don't want a period of time where the nurse is unlicensed, okay? So that means that there will be a short period of time where there's two multi-state licenses. But the board is aware of that because they see that on the report. It'll say Jane Smith, Colorado license issued 2017, Mississippi license issued 2019. And they know that Colorado needs to inactivate the old one. Okay? Just like when you move, your new driver's license that gets issued supersedes the old one, right? The old one just goes away, and the new one is what's current. In this scenario, moving from a compact state to a non-compact state, so this is a Kentucky multi-state license holder, resident of Kentucky, that moves to New York. Now, most boards of nursing have a requirement somewhere that says if you change your address as a nurse, you got to notify the board, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do nurses always do that?
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. All right. But so in this situation, she moves to New York, and she presumably is going to work in New York and is going to apply for a license by endorsement in New York. But as soon as she's no longer a resident of Kentucky, that's not a multi-state license anymore. Okay? Whether she notified the board or not, she doesn't meet the residency requirement. So she can't practice all over the country as a multi-state license holder, as a New York resident. Now, if the nurse doesn't notify the board, typically that's caught on the next renewal cycle when the board sees that she has a New York address. Does that make sense? Okay. So I think this is the last slide for me. The fiscal impact of joining the compact. So I want to talk a little bit about that in a few different directions. And hopefully I can remember all of them. First of all, you know that there was an original compact that had 25 states, okay? When that compact was implemented, a state that enacted the compact, trying to put my thoughts in order here, there were not the same uniform licensure requirements in the original compact. That's new in the new compact. Therefore, when a state joined the original compact, all the nurses became multi-state, except for those under discipline or in an alternative program. Okay? That's not the case anymore. In the new compact, we don't wave a magic wand and all Alaska nurses have a multi-state license, because now we have uniform requirements that we want to know that they adhere to, that they meet, I should say. Okay? So, if Alaska joins the compact upon enactment, well, you go into an implementation period, yes, and say 12 months later, you go live. At that point, Alaska nurses who want a multi-state license will go to your website and complete the multi-state application. Okay? And then the board will evaluate them to see if they meet the requirements for multi-state. So only those nurses that want a multi-state will apply for multi-state, and you'll see if they're eligible. The Board of Nursing will be able to set a fee for that application. That's at your discretion. So that's revenue that you did not have before, okay, if you weren't counting on. This was not a benefit that the folks at the original compact had. Because remember that all of the nurses got multi-state at once, and there was no application nor fee.
Emily?
So unless you want to apply for the multi-state license, or say for myself, I'm not going to apply for a multi-state license, my cost for my license would stay the same, and then if Wendy decided to apply for her Alaska license and the multi-state license, that's where that added fee would come in?
Nope.
Or it's so, just one fee?
Let me explain further. So a multi-state license isn't a separate license.
I knew that part, but I'm just saying it would increase your fee.
So what we're doing is taking your existing Alaska license and converting it to multi-state. Mm-hmm. So your license number stays the same, but multi-state privileges get added to it. So let's say you choose a $100 fee to evaluate the person to see if they meet the requirements, okay? That's one time to convert from single state to multi-state. It doesn't change anything else. It doesn't change your renewal fee, doesn't change your renewal cycle. Life goes on. So in other words, that fee you're paying isn't tied to a length of time. It's tied to the action of going from single state to multi-state. Okay? So you, who don't need a multi-state license, would have life as usual. The person next to you would have life as usual with the exception of that $100 fee.
But if we joined as a compact state, my license cost would potentially go up, even though I'm not going in for the multi-state. Potentially. Mm-hmm.
Not because we say so.
Okay, that's why I'm just like trying to figure out.
No,
okay.
I mean, whatever you do with fees is in the board's discretion. The compact doesn't comment on that.
Beth?
A few years ago when, I forget his name, who came up to talk about, he said that they did a fee analysis, and at that time they said that our fees, a nurse's fees, would go up about $60.
Who was that?
David. Who replaced Kathy Apple? Jim.
David Benton?
David Benton. That's who it was.
I don't know how he would know that.
Well, they said he shared that, I believe it was he that came up with Sue Ellen Mollett from Washington. Mason. And I believe that's what they told us at that time when they did a fee analysis of what it would cost, that the nurse would be paying an increase of $60 up here.
That's
different. I don't know if it was under the old contract.
That's a state-by-state thing. I don't know how he can make that judgment.
Okay.
Because the compact doesn't have a role in that. It's entirely up to you if there is whatever the fee is. So there could be a misunderstanding there.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Okay. Yes, who's that?
Hi, this is Sarah Chambers, and I just wanted to mention in Alaska that the fees are set through the division and not through the board. So if we want to talk about fees, I may be an important party to include and can add to that conversation if we want to go deeper into that.
Thank you, Sarah.
Welcome.
Emily, you have a question?
Oh, I was just thinking that the $60 increase would help cover that $6,000 for us to come in. So that's where I was thinking it was coming from.
The annual fee?
Yeah, the annual fee.
Got it.
So just to clarify, if we came online, we would tell the nurses in our state, you can do this. You don't have to.
Right.
You can do Alaska license, just Alaska, and like normal. Or you can apply for multi-state. And to apply for the multi-state compact, it's an additional fee.
So in other words, your existing nurses could do nothing and just keep doing what they've always been doing, okay? Or if they want to take advantage of a multi-state, they could complete the multi-state application to get what we call a conversion or an upgrade to multi-state.
Which would traditionally have an increase, a fee attached to that.
Entirely up to you. Could be zero. Right. Could be zero, could be 200, or anything you want.
Sarah?
I just had to unmute myself. Sorry.
No problem. So can I give you just an example of two situations, and you can steer us or steer myself clear?
Sure.
Okay, so Alaska becomes compact, and I want to keep my Alaska license. So the division says for just a single-use license, it's $100. And then if I want a multi-state license and not a single-use, it could be $100 plus a surcharge of $100 for the multi-state. And the division can say that could be a one-time charge, or it could be every time that I renew, I would have to go through and pay that additional surcharge. Can that be two viable situations?
Yes. What I am envisioning is that we would, if the board supported through a vote to pursue joining the NLC, then we would work toward analyzing those costs, and we would look into what does the law require. We may need to include in the statute change that would encompass joining the ENLC, because it would be a statutory change. We would look at, you know, do we need more authority? But right now, under Alaska law, we would look at the cost, and then we would assess the additional cost of joining the ENLC, any administrative overhead, any investigative overhead, any processing costs would create that multi-state additional fee to cover those costs, which would protect the Alaska-only licenses from having to subsidize it. And then we determine what that fee is based on our best estimate, because we would be, it's hypothetical, you know, we wouldn't know before it happens how many people might want to do it. So that could be, and that happens sometimes with new licensing programs, where we would have to say, given all the information, we think $100 extra is going to cover it. And then we find out later that was woefully low or extremely high, and then we would adjust that through a regulations process as well. I think that for me, what is really compelling is to talk about how discipline's going to work, which I know is coming up, because that's really where my biggest question mark is from a fiscal standpoint. Less about license processing, more about what the role is in for our investigators in multi-state investigations.
Okay. We just lost you a little bit with the volume, but thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Jim.
So I'd just like to make a few comments in this area, which are going back to the basics of we're reducing barriers to nurses to cross borders, practice in other states, and to be able to have a multi-state license. So by those I think by anyone that we talked about many different government agencies and enabling telepractice and enabling borderless practice. I think when you set the bar, and I understand all your comments, when you set the bar as higher fee-wise for a multi-state than a single state, that would at least be perceived to be another barrier to a multi-state license, okay? Say, because you make it harder to attain because you make it more expensive, okay? And that's just food for thought. I think if you've ever gone through licensure increases because, for any reason, because you need more staff, because your investigations are costing too much, you go through an increase across the board. And whereas the number of nurses disciplined and the percentage of nurses disciplined are 1% of your population, yet everyone has to pay the increase in fee related to discipline. Okay? So it works both ways. You're already spreading the wealth or spreading the love, so to speak, for regulation period. So that's just one thought. Now, there is one state that has a higher fee of the 33 that has a higher fee for a multi-state than a regular single state, one of the 33. And they're reviewing it to see if that's actually going to be necessary to continue in the future because they, again, felt, you know, some states are a little more concerned than others about what revenue loss would be. So, in other words, they intend to bring it down if they could.
Okay.
That's just food for thought. The other thing I wanted to comment on, that's one area of potential concern. I want to make sure you're aware of the grant that NCSBN offers. Offer states, and I say this not knowing if you can accept money from NCSBN or not, but the grant pertains to the advocacy initiatives for the compact, anything related to help promote the compact to get the legislation passed, and then also to implementing the compact. Any expenses that you might incur as a state related to implementing the compact, including temporary staffing to help you, would be borne by NCSBN through a grant. Okay? And there aren't dollar limits to the grant. The topic of, first of all, I want to take a step back and say that no state has had to add additional staff due to joining the compact. That's just not something that's been necessary. The executive director wears the hat of the commissioner of the state for the compact as well. Okay, but it's a topic that comes up in any state. Will joining the compact mean this skyrocketing of investigations? Okay, and will we then therefore need to add more investigators? And that hasn't been the case in any of the 33 states. No one has added staff in any area. And I can tell you that investigations, while you will have investigations of nurses from other states that violate here, it is proportionate to some extent. There is a science to this, okay? And I can tell you that the other states in your cohort with under 20,000 licensees tend to experience 1 to 2 investigations in the course of a year. 1 to 2. It's hard to find any state that can't absorb that in their capacity. A state as large as Joey's with 140,000 licensees has in the 10 to 20 range of additional investigations. But they also have 10 times more licensees than you have. And they're also a safe state where there's a lot of attraction because Arizona is a nice state to go to, like Florida, etc. Not that yours is not. We're talking about how beautiful it is here. So I don't want you to overestimate the number of investigations you'll have, because in all likelihood, we're talking about just 1, 2, maybe 3. The other thing to keep in mind is that the compact provisions give you the authority to recoup the cost of investigations from the nurse if you wish to. Mm-hmm. So that's just all food for thought on the fiscal end. No state in the compact will tell you that they had a difficult budget because they joined the compact. They will tell you that they almost didn't notice a difference in their budget. Now, January of 2018, five states went live with the compact. So here we are 18 months later. I would encourage you to contact any of those five states, in particular Wyoming, which is probably closest in size to you, and ask them what their experience has been 18 months later fiscally. And I think they're going to tell you we hardly noticed a blip. So let me tell you, make one more comment before turning it over to Joey, that when you start, when you go operational with the compact, you're not going to have 14,000 nurses come and apply for a multi-state license. You're going to have some. And we know from reports that those states that went live January of 2018, and now we're 18 months later, because we're just about in June, at this point, after 18 months, they have between 10 and 15%, so it's been incremental, between 10 and 15% of their licensee population has multi-state licenses now. And when we look at the uptake month by month, it's been gradual. From the month of onset, going on over the 18 months, it's been steady with the applications for multi-state, not all at once, okay? And that even after 18 months, we're up to between 10 and 15% of your licensee population. So you can do that math and calculate 10 or 15% of your 14,700 nurses and to see and spread that out over 18 months and gives you a sense of what the volume will be of applications and money. Because that's been pretty consistent among those five states that joined 18 months ago. Okay? Any questions on that?
Questions? We're good.
Okay. So, apologize for all the drinks of water. I tend to get thirsty as a pre-diabetic. We focus on Alaska and what it means for Alaska, but without knowing much, too much about the state, I say to any jurisdiction that if you have a nursing shortage, and I don't know if you do or not, but you also have to focus on the other side. If you're making Alaska an attractive place to come to work for the 2 million nurses that currently hold a multi-state license that could potentially come here as a travel nurse, and they won't have to do anything, and that's a good reason to come, because they don't have to take the step and spend several hundred dollars for an application, okay? So they would consider this where they otherwise might not. So that's the flip side. And again, I don't know if you have a nursing shortage or not, but that's just food for thought. Joey, you need to advance here with the arrows.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Good morning again. And as Jim shared with you, I've been doing this for a long time, and all the viewers that we had at the first compact and the second one, most of them did not play out. It was always something else that you didn't think about that ended up being your challenges or your problems. So Arizona's been in the compact, as he mentioned, and that I'll just tell you from my experience. Does it mean that every state has had the same experience? But about 87% of our nurses right now in Arizona have a multi-state license. So it varies from state to state. We have a lot of call centers in Arizona that tend to reach out to all the other states. And we also have a unique issue with us where United Airlines has a base in the Banner system where when they have an individual on a flight somewhere in the United States that starts to have health issues, they call into this center at Banner, and they get advice from the nurses and the physicians, and they decide whether they should continue on with the flight or not. So we have nurses circling literally all of the flights every day. And so the reason that we probably have more nurses doing that is because of that system that we have. So,
is Banner a multi-state hospital system?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Mostly in the West. So, and then just one other thing on the fiscal impact, just to give you some more history there, is that when we started out in probably 99, we all tried to figure out that magic impact and what that would be, and none of us were ever right. So I just want to admit that publicly, that what you thought you were going to experience was not the actual experience. So we have not raised our fees since 1999. We thought we would have to after the compact went into place in 2002, but we did not have to do it. So doesn't mean another state may not have to do it, but that's just some of the history that I want to share with you. So the other area that people have the most question is discipline. How does that work? What does it look like? And is it any different than what I've been doing on a regular basis? Jim has covered a lot of these points that I'm going to bring up again, but I want to make sure that we fully inform you on what to expect, because if you can expect something, you won't be surprised that I didn't have somebody tell me about that. So the first one he's touched several times this morning is a remote state adverse action. If you have somebody from Arizona coming up to Alaska and they're practicing up here on a privilege to practice and they divert and you call and we talk to each other when we know that a nurse is in trouble, we call you, or you call us and you'll say who's going to take the lead and what's the timeline that we think we can do the case. If for some reason Arizona would tell you we don't think we can do it for because of whatever issues are going on, for 6 months, we may ask you to take it, but 99% of the time, the investigation is done in the state where the alleged violation occurred. You can take action, as Jim mentioned, on that privilege as you do on any action you take right now. It can be a revocation, it can be a probationary term, or it could be a decree of censure. And it really depends upon what your state laws allow you to do that determines what you do. The home state is the one that I think has been the biggest gain for us, because with 33 states now, if you take action as a remote state and you tell Arizona whatever the issues are, you send us the information, we talk about it, then we can take action on the license. So one's on the privilege, you, and then one's on the license, us in Arizona. When we take action on that license, it impacts all the states, all 33 states. They can no longer practice if it's an adverse action. If it was a decree of censure and it has no restriction or limitation, because that's for us the lowest level of discipline that we can take, then it doesn't impact a multi-state license. But if you take a restriction or you limit that license, then they no longer have a multi-state license. So one of the cases that we had with New Mexico several years ago, it's probably the one that tells you the most intense case that we've had, is that the nurse primary state was New Mexico. They worked in Arizona diverting meds, and we worked with Mexico on it, New Mexico, and they ended up having to take action themselves, but they didn't have all the subpoenaed documents they felt they needed. So they contacted us again. We got the subpoenaed documents they needed. We sent them over to them, and they were able to do their own findings of fact based on their own law. When it got to the hearing process, and it's the only case we've had this, they wanted someone to testify, and we arranged for it to be done on the phone. So we didn't have to send anybody out of state. We've been in this for almost 20 years. We have never sent anybody to another state to do an investigative process or to have to testify. Now, it doesn't mean next week I won't be having another story to tell, but up to this point, we've been able to do everything either by communication, by emails, or phone, and it's really not been the worry that we had 20 years ago that we would be sending. The staff was kind of excited about thinking about going to other states. It's never happened. So what are the key provisions? In Article 1, it states, and Jim has talked about this, but I want to make sure that you understand, the compact administrator, which is typically whoever the executive director is, provides these investigative documents. What we have in Arizona, you may have something very different but works for you, is we have an investigative report. And in that investigative report, we list what the allegation is, and then all the documents that either support it or don't support it, and then what the findings are and the conclusions of law. We send that to the state. If you're not, if it's a privilege or practice issue, we will send it to the primary state, which may be Texas. We send that document to them because by law we're allowed to share it, and they will call us back or contact us back to say, I need something more than what I have. We've sent it out probably 20 times a year over the last 5 years. I've never had a state call back and say, I need more findings than what you have. So we've been able to anticipate and need, and we're very similar, whether we like to think we're very different, but we're very similar. We've been able to meet the needs of providing the findings that the other state needs to take action. So one's a privilege to practice, and one's on the license. So, beyond taking action on the privilege to practice, and we can do cease and desist orders, I don't know, can you do that now here? Is that the option that you have? Some of the states have never had that. So when they join the compact, they think that's a real benefit, something they never had the tool to do before. And Arkansas is the one that really talks about that the most as far as giving them options that they never had before. Issuing subpoenas, again, you work state to state. Again, if I use the example, even in Idaho, if they need subpoenas sent and the primary state is us, we will send them whatever subpoenas they need, and we will act on it. Okay. I think Jim has already talked about obtaining the criminal history background. The remote state discipline scenario is still the same. As we talked about, I can walk through this, and Mary's a resident of...
Screen sharing has stopped and staff to help.
The gremlins. Excuse
me. I can breathe now. I can breathe. It's like, gets in the back of your throat and look. Stop.
So that scenario is really about Texas and Arizona, or I'm not sure what the other state was. And
Texas and Alaska.
Okay.
Yeah.
Taking it to
the steps. Into the scenario, and it goes through step by step.
Sorry about that.
I'm just glad it's not mine to deal with.
There we go.
It's good that you don't have to. Well,
it's the same when it works, it works. And
it's for people.
When it doesn't, you have a day off.
See, I could go to that.
And go to your bottom right.
I hadn't thought about that option. Winter.
Okay.
Yeah, but you have younger kids. Yeah, but he's only got 6 years left. That's going to go like that.
You think that?
Oh, no, trust me. I have 25-year-old twins. I've already been through it.
That's
it goes so fast.
Yeah,
you're like, What just happened? How did
okay, I? Hopefully they can see it now on the other end.
Let's see. Sarah, how far are you? Can you see it now?
Yep, looks good. Thank you.
Oh, good.
Thank you. All right. Continue, please.
All right. Good job, Lisa.
Get through this and Jim can help me. So Mary is a resident of Texas, which is a compact state, and holds a multi-state license. She accepts a temporary terrorist assignment in Alaska, anticipating a compact state. And while practicing here, she violates the Nurse Practice Act by diverting controlled substances. And Mary is reported to you, the Board of Nursing. So what is the next step? So you received the complaint. You did do a preliminary review on it. You determined, yes, this probably did happen, and we need to do an investigation. So then you contact Texas, and you discuss the case, and you decide who's going to take the lead. And because Alaska is where the investigation or the violation occurred, it's probably going to be you to do the investigation. You may turn on the nurse alert. It's a system that Jim mentioned earlier this morning, that if a state checks that termination, whether the nurse alert is on, it gives them an idea that if they make an application in their state, they need to find out why that nurse alert is on. Since Alaska is a remote state, you notify the home state, Texas, by a speed number, but again, many times the different states to contact, either by phone or email, and let them know that the person is under investigation. So you treat that individual as if they were a licensee in your state. Matter of fact, in Arizona, we even put a little bit higher level of concern about it, because we know they can go to now 33 other states. So we try to take action on it just as quickly as we can. That many states treat it the same as they would as if it happened in their state. And at the conclusion of the investigation, we'll call Texas again, or you may want to develop your own procedure to do it, but we like to let the other state know that the investigation has concluded and that there is an investigative report at that point, and that we did take disciplinary action that restricts the license. So it depends upon the urgency and the risk of the individual. Sometimes you can just wait until they pick it up through the speed memo or through notification through nurses, or you may want to facilitate it going faster. And then Texas would convert the multi-state license, because there are conditions on the license at that point that makes it a single state license. So, Sarah, I know that you said that this was one of the areas that you're most concerned about. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you may be worried about that maybe we can answer?
Thank you. Regarding the discipline?
Correct.
So, it's as you very well forecasted, just a question about the unknown and the ability to quantify, you know, what will this look like? Will anything, you know, be different? And one of the concerns as I'm looking mostly, not exclusively, but mostly from a financial aspect, is the cost of we have the overhead administrative cost, and then we'll also have a cost for the investigation. And since the Texas, and the example you just gave, the Texas nurse has not paid into the Alaska system, for example, then Alaska licensees would be bearing the cost of that investigation. And I appreciated, Joey, that you mentioned that, you know, that your personal experiences, which I would have no reason to believe would be, you know, much different than anyone else's. I look forward to working with Wyoming as a remote Western state, or a state with remote areas. But just trying to estimate with 20,000-ish licensees and the cost of investigative resources, how do we, you know, we will have to factor that in and see, is it something that can be absorbed by all licensees because it's a de minimis expense, But given the economy of scale, is it more likely that the multi-state licensee would have to pay into the Alaska system somehow through that surcharge? So I'm just kind of rambling because those are the things that are kind of going through my mind right now.
So when I look at the data of other boards that are similar to your size, and I think Jim mentioned Idaho, and that's the one I'm more familiar with, I think they've taken one or two actions a year. You may be different, but I would look at boards similar to your size where they've either taken action on the privilege to practice or the multi-state license that would help you understand that. I can tell you after the number of licensees that we have, we probably do 20 cases a year related to a multi-state license or a privilege to practice, and we take about 1,500 actions overall a year. So I consider that very small percentage in relation to the total caseload that we have. And there's another 500 cases over and above that that we never open a case on because they don't meet the threshold. So out of the 2,000 overall, when you have 20, it's a very small percentage. And I don't think that 20 has added to our burden at all, because chances are if they were licensed in another state and some action were taken, we would look at that anyway if they were licensed in Arizona. And so you have to investigate that anyway. So it was a big worry for all of us in the beginning because we envisioned a very complicated process, but it's never played out for us. So I think that's one thing that you need to validate with other states, just to make sure that you're comfortable with information you're getting from various sources. But I do not anticipate that would be a huge burden for you.
Can I just clarify something that you mentioned, Joey? How many, if you mentioned one or two actions, how many investigations are you doing in Arizona on multi-state licensees per year? Because there's a cost to the investigation even if no action is taken.
The last time I looked, which was about 2 months ago, it's about 20 a year. And I know how long it takes the investigator to do an average case and how many they can do a month and a year. And overall, I would say that the impact is very minimal. It doesn't mean that some states have had a different experience, but it's not been an issue for us.
So I think that's been the experience of every state that I've talked to. Because your caseload for investigations varies from year to year. It might fluctuate and go up and down a little bit. And with that one to two additional caseloads, that's at least comparatively, when compared to your overall volume of cases, you fluctuate anyway. So you're probably not going to notice the additional one or two cases. The other thing to remember is that you're going to have Alaska nurses that are going to violate in other compact states when they're there. And so those states are going to investigate some of your Alaska nurses, which is going to be less. That is where the balance comes out, where it evens out, because some of your cases you would have otherwise investigated are going to get done by another state. And that's why it becomes a wash.
So we probably share the most cases between us and Texas. I guess the climates are similar. Or I'm not sure why we do that. And I can certainly ask my counterpart there if she has a different opinion about it, but I don't expect to have a different outcome, meaning that it's been horrible or difficult or burdensome or whatever.
I don't expect that to have an impact on any state's budget resources, or certainly not to the point where they need to hire an additional investigator for a couple of cases.
Sure, I appreciate that. I know Alaska is a little different than other states because we don't have the bordering jurisdiction where people are sort of coming in and going out on a regular basis. We don't have large telemedicine companies based here where a nurse could be physically in Alaska but practicing on someone, I'm using air quotes, you know, in another state, and so that other state would have the responsibility for, you know, for investigating. And we are different in that, in those regards, that that multi-state licensure has a lot of benefits to Alaska, but that it might, in implementation, because we don't share a border, might look differently and have a different impact, you know, on than what other states with multiple borders, with multi-licensed states, their experience.
Then I would encourage you to ask as many of us in the compact as possible what our experience is until you feel that you have what you feel is a consistent response or a consistent answer.
One of the reasons why I suggest Wyoming is because I, the executive director there, Cynthia Labonte, I know she contacted many, many states and did her due diligence before taking the leap to support the compact. And now, 18 months later, I think she has some good feedback on their experience, whether it's about investigations or otherwise.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sarah.
Let me see if I don't think there's any other slides, but let me take a look. No, just our contact information. This is an email address, general email address that comes to me, nursecompact@ncsbn.org, for anyone that has any questions. I also have some business cards here on the table. If anyone would like to, you're free to take that if you have questions subsequent to today. This is a topic of some complexity that I think that it is only through repeated introduction to it that you really get to develop some more questions and start to understand it. And I would encourage you to discuss it with stakeholders in different areas of the state, with different groups, with nursing faculty, with all your different stakeholders. And we're happy to come to provide education anytime you would like, and to answer your questions as well. So know that from one introduction like this, you may not grasp everything and you may develop other questions. And that's why we want to let you know that we're here as a resource for you.
And I just have one postscript, if I can. So 20 years ago when we were developing this, it was really back in 97 when all the delegates supported it, Bev Malone was the president of ANA, and I'm sure many of you know Bev, and I was the president of National Council. And so we had a lot of discussions about this. In the beginning, it was very worrisome for ANA, and I think you've heard that the 14 points went down to 2 points over time. But I happened to see Bev at a meeting probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago, at an academy meeting, and we still are very friendly to each other, even though we have different opinions at the time. But she brought it up to me about the compact and said that she had changed her mind totally and was now in support of the compact, which I said I would have never asked her that question, but I was thrilled that she offered it to me because we spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to respond to all the issues that people had about it, and was thrilled to know that she was able to bring closure for me anyway, maybe not for her, on the work that we did for almost 2 decades. So it was probably one of the best conversations I ever had. So.
Well, and today NLN is an endorser of the compact. So it's amazing from when she was with ANA to saying, I'm not for it. Now the CEO of NLN and all for it.
But it takes a long time. It took us a long time in Arizona to get to the point where we thought it had more benefits than not. And it took us a long time to learn. I tease people about it. It's kind of like having a child. You think you know what you're going to do when you have a baby, but it's very different once the baby gets there because it changes your whole way you think about things and your rhythm. It changed the rhythm of the staff and how they did things, and they were very used to doing it in a certain way, and probably for 85 years, and it was like, what do you mean we do this differently than what we've been doing? So it does have an impact, and you need to make sure that you believe that it's more beneficial than not before you take the action, because It's raising a baby. And we didn't even know the challenges of the baby when we passed the compact back in the beginning. I mean, we were all new mothers and we thought we knew what we were doing, but it was a huge learning curve. Huge.
All right, thank you. So I'll open up to the board members. Does anybody have any questions right now for Jim or Joey? Jim?
I'm still thinking. Okay. Thank you.
Wendy?
I'm okay right now.
Okay. Julie? Danette, are you online?
I
can't see who's online because we have the PowerPoint.
I don't have any questions at this time. Thank you.
I have a couple for Joey and Jim. One is with the compact licensure, the CEUs, each state boards have their own requirements for continuing education.
That's right.
We have 30 in Alaska, and other states may be lower. I'm licensed, I live here. I'm licensed in Virginia and Florida. Thank God, same CEUs apply for all, and it's 24 in Florida. And they have specific CEUs that you have to take that's just related to Florida CEUs. Like they have medication errors that's required. You have to know about the practice act every third renewal, et cetera. So do you find that conflicts with the compact license states?
No. So the nurse would be required to meet the CE renewal requirement in the home state, but not in other states because that's where the state where the nurse is licensed. Now, I want to tell you that probably half of states have continuing ed requirements. The other half don't.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't mean that half of the country has incompetent nurses. Yeah. And I think the basis for the decision not to make continuing education one of the list of uniform requirements was the fact that there was not, and there is not, any evidence that ties the continuing education to patient safety or to public protection. Okay, that doesn't mean that it's not useful or helpful, but that becomes a basis for why many boards decide that the board is not the enforcer of continuing education, and rather, in most places, the employer becomes the one that directs the continuing education of their nurses.
Or the employees.
Yes.
Okay.
Because there are mandates not only by accreditation bodies, but otherwise. So if we were to take a look at the study that NCSBN did about continuing education and compared the number of hours in continuing education that were completed by nurses in states where the board mandates it versus those that don't, the average number of hours in mandated states was 32 hours per nurse where the board mandates it. And in the non-mandated states where the board doesn't require it, the average number of hours was 32 per nurse, as reported by the nurse. And that's because they're doing it for their employers and for maintenance of certification. And it doesn't mean that nurses in a state where the board doesn't require it don't do continuing ed. So, that's kind of in a nutshell, the information on that. It's still going on. It's still happening. And oftentimes in the states where continuing ed is required, boards don't have the resources to verify that the appropriate continuing ed was done. Some state boards do audits of perhaps one every 1,000 nurses or something like that. And in many places, it's on an honor system as to whether you do it. Because there's a fee related to continuing ed courses, many nurses would look online for what's available at the lowest cost or free. And again, not necessarily related to the work they're doing as a nurse.
Okay. And that was just my main question about the CEU differences, because if I'm working in Alaska and I know the nurse I'm working with next to me is Alaska licensed, then I know he or she is held to the same accountability. And if they're multi-state licensed where they don't have to have it, then I have to ask my board, if they're working in Alaska with me, why am I making required flying 30 hours and he or she isn't? You know, that was just a question that I had.
Absolutely.
If I didn't have any other certification that required me to have a CEUs or my employer didn't, so.
Yep.
That was just one question. And you said that if an Alaska nurse has a violation in another state and they revert back to us also, so that means Alaska, we have to look at the other states' Nurse Practice Act to see where and when they violated the Practice Act in that state, correct? To take action?
No. No. You're taking the findings and results of the investigation in the other state and then applying your state laws to the findings. So they diverted drugs there. How do you deal with someone when they divert drugs here, according to your state law, not according to their Nurse Practice Act?
Okay. Well, I'm just thinking about a scope of practice. If they work outside the scope of practice in the state that they're in, and they hold our multi-state, and now we're looking at it, and, well, guess what? Alaska, they're within their scope of practice for us, but yet they knew that they were in another state, and they worked outside that state's scope of practice. So that means we'd have to take action on them because they were working in another state outside of their scope of practice in that state, or would that state be doing it themselves? You see, did that make sense there?
So they violated in that state by practicing outside of the scope in that state.
Right, but it's within our scope here.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So
that
state's going to take action.
Correct.
And then tell you what they did.
Right.
And you're going to look at that and say, how would we treat someone who practices outside of the scope here?
Well, so we're going to take their scope and look at it ours and say, okay, if that scope was us, how would we look at it as infraction?
Right.
Okay. Did I perk anybody with any questions from the board yet?
Mr. Chair, this is Jeanette. I have one. I did come up with a question.
Yes, Jeanette, go ahead.
So I have licenses in three states, and they have three different expiration dates. Do you find that it puts an extra burden on employers to keep all of these expiration dates sorted out? Because it's very easy for employers in Alaska because all their licenses expire on the same day.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out how that relates to the multi-state license where there's one license for many states.
Well, like I have a license in Montana that expires in December of every year. I have a Washington license that expires in January. I have an Alaska license that expires in November. And right now, employers, like I work for a very large employer, and we know that everyone who has a license in Alaska, their licenses are going to expire at the same time. And I just wondered if you had experience with big employers now who may have someone who has a multi-state license in Texas that expires on at a different cycle than it does Alaska.
Oh, I think I see what you're saying. Okay, because originally I was thinking, why would the Alaska employer be concerned with when your Montana license expires? But you're asking if the nurse... So the process for the nurse is just the same. For the employer is just the same in that they want to verify when the nurse's license expires at the time they're hiring them, and they probably have their own process just as well. But I think that that's where e-notify is going to come in handy, that the employer registers their nurse with e-notify so they can receive notifications on when that license is going to expire. So my thought is that if this is a nurse of a temporary duration, and I don't know how long travel nurses are. I hear 13 weeks is the average, but hopefully it does not going to expire during that time, or they're aware of it when they hire them. But otherwise, I think regardless of when the expiration date is, e-notify is the tool to help them so that they can get a heads up when the expiration is getting close. You want to add anything?
And the other part for Danetta is to join nurses, and then she'd be notified and she'd know.
Danetta, was that okay for you?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, Emily, you have a question?
I think I kind of answered it myself, though. But so, A, as an LPN, in Delaware or in a lower 48 state, actually, Joe and I were talking about this yesterday, I could do, like, sterile dressing changes. However, up here in Alaska, it can't be done. As an LPN, I can't do that. So it's just making sure that, you know, the nurses that travel up here, how do we really get to make sure that those nurses understand what our statutes are here in Alaska and our regulations in Alaska are versus what their home state is? And I can see it happening where, well, I can do that back home. Why can't I do it here type thing?
Right.
The other thing that I was thinking about was certain nurses that get certifications where their home state is or something like that, and it's more faculty or facility employer training, and then they can't bring it up here. So that was my other thing that I answered myself. So, like, really, do we see a lot of nurses have that issue with, well, I could do that back home, why can't I do it here type thing? And, well, like, LPNs is one of those, it's a weird line, because we do have a lot of things that we can't do that RNs can, and then there's some states that say it's okay and some states that say it's not.
That's right. But I think that that's a situation that already occurs here, because your travel nurses come from different states.
Right.
And they are already used to maybe having those nuances that are different in the state they come from. So I don't think that's going to be anything new when you join the compact, is what I'm saying. But the employer is always the one that's dealing with those situations in ensuring that the nurse is doing something they're qualified to do. They're not going to put that, you know, nurse in peds or in cardiac that doesn't have that experience that they need in that area. I mean, that's a part of them doing their due diligence in the hiring process, and then once they hire the person, to make sure that they're doing what's within their scope in this state. So that's just a part of the training. And again, I think that that's not going to be something new for employers when the compact starts, because that person could have been here and had gotten an Alaska license. Just because they got an Alaska license, what's the guarantee to you as a board that they know your Nurse Practice Act?
Right. No, and that's kind of why.
So I think that situation exists already, and I would imagine your employers are managing it in some way.
So to answer your question, we've not had that issue.
Yeah, that's why I was curious if anybody's actually said that.
So the employers, I think, if there's something unique about scope of practice for their facility, I think they usually make a very big effort to make sure the person knows. But you're right. We all think everybody's read the Nurse Practice Act, and I don't know what percentage have or have not, but I think it's a misnomer. I think we do everything we can to get them to be informed about it, but I think they know they need to get a license, and beyond that, I think it's probably a good study of some type, but I don't know. But it's a good question.
Wendy?
Well, and it's not just the Nurse Practice Act, but it's also knowledge of the advisory opinions, which also impact practice here.
Right.
So it goes beyond that, just the one document.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Sarah. I started my video so we could at least have a little face-to-face. I just wanted to pipe in and mention that the Board of Nursing in its previous iterations has been looking at the NLC for 2 years, I think. And so staff and Joe and maybe others who have some longevity with the program have done a little bit of research. I think Beth Farmstrom mentioned some of the research. And we're also aware of the grant, Jim, that you mentioned, and that's an exciting bridge. It's kind of the way I'm seeing it. So I think that we have sort of this multi-phased system of questions. One would be whether the board endorses the idea, whether the board is open to entering into the compact. And if the board votes and says, yes, we want to pursue this, then that opens the door to the legislative process, which now is a good time to be wrestling with it, which is why we wanted Jim to come with the brand new board and talk about it and kind of give everybody a fresh opportunity to learn. Our legislative session, at least the regular session, is just ended, and they'll reconvene in January. So we've got time to ask questions, but also to prepare legislation, working, you know, with the governor's office and with other stakeholders. We can work with ASHNA, Alaska State Hospital Nursing Home Association. I know that they're very interested and may have somebody at the meeting. Hi. So, you know, we've got the phase one is for the board to say, we think this is a great idea. We think this is a good idea, but we're skeptical. We think this is a terrible idea. Let's never speak of it again. And have that conversation now. And then if the board is amenable, then we need to apply for the grant. Because my understanding is that that's sort of the trigger. The board says, yes, we want to pursue legislation. Then we apply for the grant and we go through the steps of talking with stakeholders, talking with employers, working with other states. You know, how did you solve this problem? Was it a problem? And that way we're prepared if the board wants to go in that direction to pursue legislation in January, and we're ready to hit the ground running. I know there's a lot of interest in many, many stakeholder groups for the compact to move forward, but the board really holds the power right now. The board also doesn't hold ultimate power. So there could be legislation introduced regardless of what the board thinks. And so taking the time now and really wrapping our heads around it is going to help advance and help us all be ready, because if a legislator pre-files in December or files a piece of legislation in January, we are all, the board and myself and our new exec, when we get one, fingers crossed, are all going to be jumping into this regardless of whether, you know, of what our ability to engage and resources are. We will not have had the benefit of the grant to help us move through that. We will be jumping into real live legislative situation that right. could be effective immediately. It's sort of like, in my mind, everything else in the universe will stop.
Right, right.
And we will deal with this legislation. So I'm trying to throw out several messages to you at the same time, because I know our time is limited today. When you get to a point of consideration, which could be today, it could be at a special meeting, it could be at your next regular meeting in August, but when we get to the point of the board saying we need to vote on it, then I'd like to be involved. I'd like for our key stakeholders to be able to be involved.
Yes.
And to be a very transparent process. But to move forward on a determination sooner rather than later, so the decision isn't being made for us. So hopefully that's helpful insight.
And I appreciate that, and I think that's the best thing you can do. There are a number of states we saw this year, because of the current environment as far as occupational licensing is concerned, where we've seen legislatures move forward with the compact, again, like you said, irrespective of what the board thought or felt. And I, when I speak with our members at NCSBN, I encourage them to be fully informed about the compact, regardless of whether they intend to move forward with it or not. So that in the event that it happens, at least you're not rushing at the last minute to try to understand it. And so I'm available for you in whatever amount of time you have to continue the educational process. More questions will come up. There's a lot more people beyond those in this room that haven't heard and had their questions answered. And I think it's an ongoing process. As I mentioned earlier, is we've seen this again and again in states, and you really need to educate as many stakeholders as possible so you're on the exact right track, and I would encourage you to proceed that way.
Are we good? More to the good right now?
Pat, do you have any questions? If not, I'm going to open up to Jim and the public forum. Jim, do you want to take questions individually, or do you want me to pick out the individuals for you as it comes?
Anyone can ask questions.
Okay, you had a question earlier that you've been waiting for.
I did. I'm Kim Sleeper. The question I have is basically hanging off what you said earlier about the requirements for graduation or near graduation. That's in the compact. That's in the statute. How do you deal with when a person gets a multi-state license and from another state and comes to Alaska now to work, but we require a graduation? Is that right? Is that what you said earlier?
We require a certain level of education and degree of awardment right now.
Right. But if the multi-state doesn't?
That was my question to Jim. And in the past, because we're not compact, they would have to apply for a license, and we would go do like a background check, the education. And if they don't meet it, it would basically come to the board for evaluation. And there's been numerous ones that have been rejected due to the fact that it's in our regulations that they have to have a degree or equivalency, and their certificate program doesn't meet that requirement, so they cannot be issued a license here.
So your current requirement is that they must have a degree.
Right.
Gotcha. So I've noted that to get further clarification from our legal counsel on that.
Okay.
As to how that plays out, given our provision.
Okay. Does that answer?
Okay. Fine.
They also have to apply.
Who else? Laura?
I have a question, too.
Correct?
Apply for the state boards?
No. They have to still have to, if they move out of their state, move the compact, they still have to reapply with the state of Alaska.
If they become a resident here.
Become a resident here.
Yeah.
So that could be kind of a...
Right. You're right.
It that way, too.
I have two questions. I'm not sure if I was following the investigative process completely, but what I heard was that if an Alaska nurse is in another state and commits an infraction, and the investigation, say drug diversion, happens in another state and the investigation happens there, and then a disciplinary process happens there, and then that nurse comes back to Alaska, and that information is communicated.
Back to Alaska.
Yes. And then does another disciplinary process happen here? So is that nurse sanctioned twice for the same offense?
Yes, but the one in the remote state is disciplining the privilege to practice in that state, so not the license. So in other words, the Alaska nurse diverts drugs in Arizona. Arizona has to protect the people of Arizona, so they suspend her privilege to practice there.
So that's the extent of the discipline in the other state.
Right.
And then so any consent agreement or sanctions on practice or supervised practice would then come in Alaska.
So then they do what they treat it the way they would, and then it comes back to Alaska to say, how does Alaska deal with someone who diverted drugs?
So ongoing monitoring or treatment.
Right.
Okay.
And then you deal with that, and that action is on the license.
So if you
normally would suspend the license for a period of time or whatever, that's what you do.
And in that scenario, that license automatically reverts to a one-state license, the multi-state
reverts privilege. To a one-state license during the term of the discipline.
During the term of the discipline.
Right.
Okay.
To protect the rest of the states.
Okay.
And you would want that to be done by the other states as well to protect your state.
Right. Okay.
Jim, I have Sarah has a question, then there's a Karen online also has a question. Sarah, go ahead.
I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. There's a Karen Scroggins online.
Yes. Hi, everybody. So I'm Karen Scroggins. I'm the Chief Nursing Officer at Central Peninsula Hospital and also
Hi, Karen.
The...
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much. And I'm also the chair of the CNO committee for ASHNA. So firstly, I want to firstly, I really appreciate you using this technology now so that I can fully participate in the board meetings from Soldata. So thank you for that. Secondly, I also wanted to thank you for bringing Jim back. This is an issue that our CNO group has been very passionate about the last couple of years, and really just want to voice my support for continuing the conversation around Compact, because I do believe very strongly that this will help continue to improve the safety of patients in Alaska. So I'm very appreciative that you guys have taken this back up, and just wanted to voice my support both as a CNO and as the ASHNA chair for the CNO committee. So that was my comment. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you, Karen.
Danielle? I wanted to bounce off what you were saying about disciplining the privilege, disciplining the license. If just the privilege is disciplined, like they picked it up, they're multi in Alaska, they went to Arizona, got disciplined there. Is that reportable to nurses? Is that public if we choose not to discipline the license?
Any discipline is reportable. So Arizona has to report it and Alaska has to report it. Is that what you're asking?
No, I'm saying, like, if they get disciplined on their privilege, but Alaska chooses not to discipline their license because we don't think it's up to our standard of median to discipline their license and take away their multi-license.
You should also report that.
But does Arizona still report it to nurses?
We do on the privilege, yes.
Yes.
And that's public, so people can see it still.
Right. Yep.
It's required by the database?
It's in the National Practitioner Database.
So it goes up on NPDB?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's the federal guidelines. Okay. You have to report when you take action.
Okay. But that license would still be multi-licensed since the home state didn't choose to pursue.
That's right.
However, since she took action on the privilege, that nurse wouldn't be able to come back to Arizona.
But could go to other multi-states that didn't.
Correct. That's good. Okay.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get all the pieces to fit together.
Right.
Donna?
So how would you know that the nurse... I guess didn't come back to Arizona if you sanctioned the license or the privilege to practice in Arizona? Would every employer know that?
So if the employer looks the individual up in the nurses.com, they will be able to see that the privilege to practice that discipline.
So that becomes public in the nurses database. That when you pull up James Smith, it's going to show privilege to practice discipline in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Her privileges are suspended there.
So I guess my other question might be about if there's 3 million nurses in this database, or how many ever there are there ever errors made in a sanction on one person's license? Like, what do you use to make sure that every Jane Smith picked the right one?
So keep in mind, it isn't someone at NCSBN doing anything with the data. It's each board of nursing uploading their data into the system every night. And that happens daily from all the boards in the country. So it aggregates it. NCSBN can't touch the data whatsoever. But what they do is bring together that licensee and it's matched based on different indicators, and they all have a unique NCSBN ID. So for you, if you hold 5 licenses, you'll come up on one screen and it'll show all your licenses, even if you have Mary Jane Smith, Mary J. Smith, etc. Okay? And because you all have each individual has a unique NCSBN ID.
And how do you get an NCSBN?
It's assigned.
When
you're registered?
When you're licensed.
So from 1979, I have a number that's in your database.
Yes.
I was licensed in 75, and I have a number.
So if there is an error, to answer your question, we have spelled out in the rules how the nurse can ask for clarification and or challenge it. So there is a process.
So keep in mind that the data comes from the Board of Nursing. So if it's in nurses as an error, it was submitted by the Board of Nursing as an error. It wasn't that NCSBN made the error.
Gotcha. And where is a copy of these rules that everybody works under?
For the Compact?
Yeah.
On the Compact website, public website. So the NCS, oh gosh, I don't want to guess it. But if you go to the ncsbn.org/NLC. You will see on the left navigation the rules, and the PDF document of all the rules are there.
So earlier, did you say that the NCSBN is a 501c3?
Yes.
But this compact is separate from the
That's right.
NCSBN.
Separate agency. Yes, correct.
The commission.
It's a state agency.
It's
a compact.
State?
No, not a state. It's
it's a consortium.
It's all of the states in one agency.
It's all the states.
But it's not federal.
No.
So multi-state commission.
Multi-state commission. That's a good
everyone
way to
who's
put it.
In the compact.
Yes.
Has a representative.
Yes, exactly.
Madeline?
I have a question.
Sure.
So one of the things that we have a little bit of a question about is that one of the things we have up here is a lot of case management nurses and a lot of nurses that currently have to have 50 state licensures
yeah.
for their job. And a large portion of them at some point are compact somewhere else. They're multi-state somewhere else. And so what I'm guessing is going to happen is once all of these nurses see, oh my goodness, you're a compact state now, they're not going to renew their licenses. So and I think that would be a fiscal concern mm-hmm. for us, is to see how many of these nurses, because that's a lot of what we do sometimes is getting these, 50 state licensures done, because these are big companies. And, how would that affect us? Because if they hold a multi-state and we become compact, we no longer have those licensees as income.
Right. And that happened, that's not a new phenomenon, but that happened in every state, because that's the beauty of the compact, is that the nurse needs to hold less licenses, right? And so yes, overall there's less licenses overall across the country. Mm-hmm. That's what we've been talking about, the duplicative mm-hmm. nature of licensure. So right, nurses will stop renewing licenses if they're included in their multi-state license. That's exactly right.
So maybe if we reach out to some of those similar states like Wyoming to see kind of like what the cost differences were when people didn't renew, and then did it increase the prices of licensure for just the single state licensure or for the multi-state licensure applications? Did it increase that price?
So right, that goes.
So that's something we can ask.
Exactly. Probably. That goes back to the comments I was making earlier, that we encourage you to talk to them, because I think they will tell you that it's largely been a wash. They didn't experience a big drop in income, or not one that they couldn't absorb. And secondly, that the states have not increased their license application fee due to joining the compact.
Laura, you had
I have one, and this is sort of a general interest question. Where does NCSBN get its funding that the compact can pay them a mere $50,000 a year for all the services that NCSBN provides?
Where they get their funding?
Yeah, and then NCSBN funds everybody to travel. And
collects exam fees.
That's their sole source of funding? Is
90-some percent.
Pretty much.
But every nurse only takes the NCLEX once?
But there's a huge graduating class every year.
Every year, wow. Okay.
And then collects throughout the world.
Hold on, Donna. Emily?
Quick question for the applications team. How many applications do we actually get right before summer? that's where our buku amount of applications come in.
Before the graduates.
Before the graduates. Yeah. So that's where I'm thinking, me, I came from Delaware. Delaware was a compact state. No big deal there. If I had the option to move to go to Wyoming for the summer and work, or Alaska, I'm going to choose Alaska. That's just my personal opinion. Or California, I'm going to go to Alaska because I'm an outdoorsy person. That's where I'm seriously seeing us losing a lot of money, because of the amount of nurses that come up here for the summer months and then go back to their home state. They don't want to live with the winter. I get that. That's fine. But I also do kind of see where some of the Alaska nurses may want to stay here as an Alaska resident and leave for the winter. I see that balance, but I just really see us ending up having to increase our application fees because the amount of nurses that just come up here for the summer and then leave. I had another part to that, too. So then that the investigations team, I feel like we do a lot of investigations, just being on the board new. And I just feel like our investigations cost is going to go still be high, and then we're just sending all the info to another state, and we're not getting back any funding from that. So, like, I just kind of, not really a question, but just kind of a statement that I'm seeing here, and I'm not sure where we're going to be getting that funding back.
Well, like Joey said, when Arizona joined the compact, they didn't have all the answers to the questions as far as knowing until you actually do it. So we can only tell you what the experience of the other states has been.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that every state felt that they were different, that it's going to be different for them. It's going to be, you know, Armageddon for them by joining, and that hasn't panned out in any state. And so what you're saying, I've heard many times from many states, not to say that it's not true.
No, yeah.
But every state's different. You're certainly different by your location. But we haven't seen any calamities yet in any state.
So Hawaii is not one of the states, correct?
No.
I'm just curious if they've done any of that type of research where, like, her nurses wanted to come to Hawaii because it's Hawaii for the summer and then go back to their others.
Or the winter.
Or the winter. Yeah, that's true. But I'm just like, if they have that big influx of nurses trying to come at certain times
like
of the year.
Like the tourism nurses type.
Yeah. Thing. So I'm just curious that, research for us guys.
We have to research it. Donna, you have another question?
Yeah, I just had a question about the cost of the NCLEX exam. I took it years ago.
200. Yeah, it's 200.
For the exam? Mm-hmm. And has that gone up over time?
Each state charges a different fee.
I thought it was a national exam.
There is one national exam, but the state can charge a fee over and above the cost of the national exam. For the application?
I see it different.
Madeline?
So through Pearson View, it's a $200 fee that's charged by Pearson View. That's outside of the state of Alaska. That's the fee that's charged to actually go and show up and take your NCLEX. We charge our licensure fees, but we don't charge a testing fee on top of that.
So what is your fee then?
Right now it's $375 for licensure, plus they pay $200 separately to Pearson View.
$200 would go to NCSBM.
So it's the license by examination fee you're referring to? The application for license by exam is what the board charges.
But Pearson gets paid.
Pearson gets paid $200.
That's a standard $200 across the country.
Mm-hmm. So how does NCSBM go back get money?
Because they get a cut of that.
Of which?
The 200.
A cut of the basic 200.
They run the test.
Because they own the test.
They own the test.
Is how much?
Oh, I got no idea. I mean, where these things aren't so much related to the compact.
So, but that's how you get revenue to fund the commission, is it not? And the grants.
They subsidize a great part of it, right? So, yeah.
So and the fee that National Council charges, $200, is. It takes a lot of people to continually update the test. So it's updated every 3 years. But there's a lot of psychometrics that goes into it. So people think sometimes that's $200, but it costs a lot to maintain that test. I can't tell you what that number is right now, but it's a huge number.
All right.
Lynn from Ashna, and I would like to thank Jim and Joey for coming here and sharing this educational opportunity with us, and for the board for having it on the agenda. I think it's great to learn together and to then be able to ask questions and be able to help a pathway for our members and nurses that I know who would appreciate this streamlined licensing process. And our members are totally committed and supportive of the Nurse Licensure Compact. As you all well know, So we truly appreciate the opportunity of this education and dialogue together. So we wanted to say thank you.
That's Alaska Hospital Association.
Yes. Great.
And I would just support the same thing that she's saying. I work for Sunny's Medical Care, and we provide dialysis services to 300 Alaskans, and we really are struggling with getting nurses here, and there are lots of turnover. And I don't want to read this to you, but I'd really like to share this with the board. I have a copy for all the board members to read at your own leisure. But just to say that we also support.
Well, let me just ask a question here. And does anybody else have any questions for Joey and Jim directly? Is there anybody online that has any questions for Joey and Jim?
Oh, we dropped.
We'll come back to the online. If you don't have any questions for this, I'm going to close the questions for Joey and Jim, and I'll give you a moment to address the board, if you like, before we wrap up. So if they want to address the board and you have handouts, if you two would like to step aside for a moment,
sure.
I will bring up from the public group a moment. And thank you very much for the presentation.
Glad to be here.
Mr. Chair, may I hand these out to the board
members?
Yes,
you may.
Thank you so much. And thank you.
If you give me some, I will help you so you can get the
process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want a cracker?
Yeah.
I have a
okay.
After we're going to break soon.
Oh, 30 minutes.
Well, I thought you were supposed to have a meeting at 1.
All right.
Yeah.
Board, this young lady is. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon. So thank you so much for the opportunity to be here and to spend some time with you. And I first wanted to thank each of you for coming and serving on this board. I listened to many of your comments when you were going through your hearings with your House and Senate hearings. My name is Tammy Pro. I'm with the Department of Defense, and I'm your regional liaison that does military, community, and family policy issues. And as Jim mentioned, the Department of Defense has worked closely on compacts and on improving occupational licensure for spouses for about the past 8 years because of the impact it has on our military community. We can't maintain a viable force without taking care of our military spouses. And we know that military spouses want to work. We have, and one-third of military spouses require a license to work. And of those one-third that require a license, one-third of them work in the health occupations. So the Nurse Licensure Compact is very important to us. And it's very important in a state like Alaska, where 2.5% of your population are military spouses, either active duty or reserve military spouses. So this is a significant percentage of your workforce. This is meaningful to me as a veteran and a military spouse. I work in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, and Alaska. And getting to spend time here is meaningful because this makes a difference in the lives of your military community, which means so much for this state. So I just want to thank each of you for taking time to listen and consider this. This is not easy stuff. This is important stuff. This is the stuff that changes not only the lives of patients and the lives of the people working with patients, but the lives of all that we do to take care of people. And that's what the Nurse Licensure Compact can do for us. So I am here as a partner to support these efforts, as a partner with Jim and his team to support these efforts as we move forward in making this decision in Alaska. And I just want to know I'm here to support the efforts of this board as you go through this process. So
Thank you very much for all of the time that you gave to this effort today, and please let me know if there's anything I can do to help. I usually spend my time in Juneau, but I am occasionally in Anchorage, and you will probably be seeing more of me at these meetings. So I will be rushing off to another meeting out at J-Bear, but thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the public forum that wants to address the board at this time? No? How are we with the connection? The gremlins?
We don't have internet connection anymore.
Uh-oh. I lost it here also. Yeah, I don't have it on my laptop anymore. I was hooked up to the building. All right, then. I know I went over the 12 o'clock. Jim, do you have anything else you want to...
Oh, just a closing comment. And
yes.
And that I know that you're on the tail end of several days of meetings, and I've been there, and I know how you feel after so many meetings, and I really appreciate the amount of time you gave us to dedicate to talking about the topic. As you can see, some people think I'm crazy when I say we need 2 or 3 hours, especially at a board meeting. But you see, it does take that amount of time to really get down to all the details and all the questions. And I really appreciate that you allowed that time to have the discussion. So thank you, and I'm willing to come back anytime at your request.
Thank you very much. Beth, Paul, Emily?
Did we get a copy of your PowerPoint?
I will email it to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And we have a copy on the laptop if it doesn't go fully on us. So.
All right, just
want to
make sure we have a copy.
All right.
It would be good
thank
to get
a copy.
You're welcome. Thank you also for, if I do not sound being patient with our responses, and knowing that this is going to be an
okay, 12:38. Alaska Board of Nursing is going to recess for lunch. No?
Yeah.
Good.
We don't have time for lunch.
I know.